Now, back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Diana, and hello, I'm Shaka Sali, and you're welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, coming to you live from Washington. If you have just joined us, today's topic, the significance of the ongoing International Criminal Court Conference in the Ugandan capital, Kampala. Our distinguished guest is Muna Ndulo, Professor of Law and the Director of the Institute for African Development at Cornell University in Ithaca, New York. He's also a member of the Advisory Committee of Human Rights Watch / Africa. Well, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to finally host you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you for having me.
You're most welcome. Mm-hmm. You earlier had a question from one of your compatriots. By now people should know that you originally come from Zambia. Mm-hmm. There's a gentleman by the name Oble Chindefu. Mm-hmm. He's from the capital Lusaka. And he had something about a letter that you wrote, or a column that you wrote. I remember that he said that even your panelist, Professor Ndulo, with due respect, condones the people who abrogate the law in Zambia. It does not mean that when you are a journalist, the law is below you. This is in reference to an article Professor Ndulo wrote recently that has sent one editor in chief of Post newspapers to prison. How do you react to that?
Well, I think what he's referring to is an article that I wrote some time back about the prosecution of Chancellor Chabwera. But I think the simple answer to his question is that he completely misunderstands the law of contempt of court. Mm-hmm. There is no law in Zambia that says you cannot comment on a court case. And I don't think that you'd find anybody defining a crime in those terms. So I think I would rather end at that, you know, it's not an offense to comment on a court case.
What about the gentleman that you were talking about? He's called Membe.
Yeah.
He's a man, over the years, frankly, has been likened as, at one time when there was one party state in the country, he was called the opposition political party.
Well, the issue really involved this article I wrote, which basically was not a criticism of the court system, but rather of the prosecution of a journalist who belonged to the Post. Mm-hmm. And Membe has been prosecuted on the basis that his paper, published that article. Mm-hmm. And my contention is that the article is not contemptuous. And if you read the article, in fact, it praises the courts and simply said that it lays the blame of the prosecution on the president, and also suggests that the director of public prosecutions should have intervened in the public interest. And my concern there was really the damage this case was doing to the international image of Zambia.
I see.
Yeah.
Let's go to the ongoing ICC conference in the Ugandan capital, Kampala. You've heard, of course, that the crime of aggression is very contentious. Why is it very contentious, really?
Well, I think the contentious issue over the crime of aggression is the question of how do you trigger the prosecution. The crime of aggression itself, if you look at it historically, mm-hmm. you'll find that during the Nuremberg trials, it was in fact a charge that was brought against the persons that appeared before the Nuremberg trials. Now, the issue that's contentious in Kampala is the role the Security Council should play in triggering or defining what constitutes aggression. Mm-hmm. The U.S., Russia, and China are insisting that the trigger should be the Security Council should decide mm-hmm. that an offense of aggression has been committed, and then the ICC can take action. Now, of course, the other states argue that that would actually mean that you're giving the veto countries the power to decide when this offense is prosecuted. So I think that's the major issue, really, is what role should the Security Council play in this.
What is the legal definition of crime of aggression and the political definition of it?
Well, first of all, I think you start with the charter itself. You know, the UN charter prohibits the use of force against other states. So, and I think some would argue that it's now really a use conscious norm that you don't use force against another state. The only time that you can use force against another state is when the Security Council has authorized that force.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, there are arguments about whether the humanitarian intervention is okay, and of course that is something that is debated among international scholars.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think that the real issue really is always the question of when is aggression committed, because I think what the U.S. is concerned about is defining what might be considered humanitarian intervention being classified as aggression. I mean, for example, the U.S. argued that when they went into Kosovo, there was no Security Council authorization. They argued that it was humanitarian intervention.
Mm-hmm.
So cases like that begin to be the issue. Now, it's a question of really what role should the Security Council play in triggering the prosecution?
When you look at the history of the ICC, really you find that historically the United States should probably be part of the architects of the court.
Mm.
What happened? How come they are not signatories to the Rome Statute?
Mm. I hope that the U.S. Will support the court. The U.S. Historically, as you rightly point out, has actually been supportive and supported the process. I am one of those that believe that the legal grounds that advance for objecting to the ICC are really not valid, and we look forward to them playing a useful role and joining the ICC. And I think it will be important for the world that they join the ICC.
What about concerns and complaints, some might say, from the African continent and really even among the African diaspora globally, that this ICC, frankly, in their view, seems to be targeting Africa or third world, so to speak, specifically?
Mm.
Of course, the chief prosecutor saying that Africa, it is happening in Africa because Africa is changing.
Mm.
Well, you agree with him?
I agree with him, but I would go further and say that there is actually no evidence that the court has targeted Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that many of the people that make those accusations are based on their accusations of the simple fact that the five cases that the ICC has are all from Africa. But if you actually look at the cases, you find that each one of those cases have been a referral by the home states. In the case of Kenya has referred the case, Uganda has referred the case, so has Congo Brazzaville, and the Congo Kinshasa has done so. The only other African case that's before the Security Council, which has not been referred by a state, is the Sudanese case, Bashir's case, but that has been referred to the ICC by the Security Council as a situation to look at.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm yet to see the basis of this accusation in terms of when you look at actually the facts on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, I think that if you look at the composition of the judges, I know 5 of the 11 judges of the ICC are African, and they're playing a very, very important role.
The deputy
prosecutor is an African.
The first deputy, actually president, is an African.
Yes, and
Diarra.
Yes, and also even the deputy to campus is an African.
Is an African.
Yes.
So you really don't have any concerns as an African that Africa seems, frankly, to be targeted.
I don't see the evidence.
But what about the fact that people are telling you, for example, that what is happening elsewhere in the world, frankly, has the same impact and in some cases perhaps even worse.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with that, but I think Compos provided a very valid legal reason that, for the ICC to have jurisdiction, the countries involved have to be members. If they are not members, then you have to rely on the Security Council. So really, in my view, those situations, they're correct concerns that we should be concerned about what's happening in other areas of the world, in the Middle East, in Afghanistan. But I think we're blaming the wrong person, the wrong body,
mm-hmm.
because what we should be saying is that the Security Council should take action to refer those cases to the ICC, those situations to the ICC.
It is true that in a lot of countries on the African continent, there is really a problem with dispensing justice. You have judiciary systems which don't seem to work. There are cases, in fact, where some observers have said that you shouldn't even hire a lawyer, really, because you're wasting your time. All you need, if you have money, you can buy a judge. Do you therefore think that ordinary Africans on the continent should have confidence in the ICC? There is something for them there?
I think this is a very important point that you bring out. If you look at the referrals from Kenya, one of the main reasons why the Kenyans have decided to refer the cases to the ICC is lack of trust in the Kenyan judiciary. So what we should be focusing on, if we want our countries to try these cases, is to build up our judiciaries into independent judiciaries that can be trusted to try these cases. Mm-hmm. And we must remember that the jurisdiction of the ICC is complementary. So if a state is willing to try the individual, the ICC has no business coming in. So first, there are referrals by the state's consent. And I think the reasons these countries are doing that is really a vote of no confidence in their own judicial systems to handle these cases.
But what if, for example, the Kenyan authorities in fact had gone ahead and said, you know what, it doesn't matter what you say, we do have our own judiciary system and this is the one we are going to use. What would the ordinary Kenyan do? And in fact, is there anything that the international community would have done, for example, to make sure that they can facilitate the ICC to come, on, to come into play?
No. In fact, if the Kenyans had not referred the case of Kenya to the ICC, the only recourse would have been the Security Council referring the Kenyan situation to the ICC. And if you recall, in Kenya, after the election violence, it was suggested that the opposition should take their complaints to the courts, and the opposition said no, they don't want to take them to the courts because they don't believe that they will get justice from those courts. So really, the question of going to the ICC in the case of Kenya, for example, is really a Kenyan decision.
Especially, of course, when you even had a situation where you had this bizarre swearing-in ceremony of Mr. Kibaki's second term with his Chief Justice.
Yes, that was, you know, rather bizarre as I just described it.
Very interesting. You are tuned into Straight Talk Africa, and in a moment we'll return to your comments and questions. The number to call is 202-619-3111. US country code is 1. Remember to give our operator your country code and city code if you want us to call you back, so please don't go away.
The Rome Statute is the International Criminal Court's governing treaty, adopted in 1998 in an effort to prevent and punish crimes against humanity. Yet last year's arrest warrant for Sudan's President Omar Hassan al-Bashir and the investigation into Kenya's post-election violence by the ICC has some experts saying that the court in The Hague is unfairly targeting Africa. So here is our question of the week. Are African nations being targeted unfairly by the International Criminal Court? Send an email to africatv@voanews.com and let us know.
Welcome back to In Focus right here on The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Dimyake Mwakalyelye.
And I'm Vincent McCorry. In Focus is going to offer the audience what many other television outlets are not able to offer. We're going to tell you the story behind the story.
What happened, how it happened, why it happened.
Oh, Jamaica is great.
East or West, home is best. My co-host, Vincent McCorry, encyclopedia, I call him.
Being able to look around what's happening around the world and help people to get a better understanding.
Did you like today's show? Write and tell us what you think, or give us some suggestions, and tell us on what station you're tuned into. Here's our address. Straight Talk Africa, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or send us an email at africatv@voanews.com. Log on to our website,
www.voanews.com/TV2Africa.
Letter of the Week, Chibuku Ogochukwu, Evans of Lagos, Nigeria, writes, African governments do not provide their citizens the right to elections as stipulated in the Article 21 on the United Nations Universal Declaration on Human Rights in the following scores. 1. The right to take part in the government directly or through freely elected representatives has always been denied by the incumbent. 2. The right of equal access to the public service has long ago been violated by the people in power. Tribalism and ethnicity also cannot be ruled out in this violation of people's human rights. Every government in power will do everything possible to flood their persons, even when the candidate is not the right person. 3. Shaka, you and I know that the will of the people has never been the basis for governments in power in African countries. Have there been any credible and genuine elections in Africa? Otherwise, why all the power-sharing governments?
Thank you very much, Deirdre. And of course, thanks, Chibuko, for responding to last week's question on whether African governments are providing their citizens their right to elections that adhere to Article 21 of the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Welcome back to Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Just a reminder, we would like to hear from you, so drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com, and maybe, just maybe, your letter can be read on air as our letter of the week. Our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Let me come back to you, Professor Munandulo. I had to cut you short because there is no democracy in this studio. When a producer tells you to go for a break, my man, you have to go like a soldier in Parade Square.
Yeah.
Now, we were talking before the, during the break about this issue, for example, this important issue that people have been raising, the issue of some countries, and specifically those in Africa, really, which are the signatories to the Rome Statute. Mm-hmm. They are members, in essence, of the family of the ICC. Mm-hmm. And yet they have gone on to actually be involved in other arrangements, mm-hmm. signing bilateral agreements. Mm-hmm. For example, the question that has been raised is, what is Article 98, mm-hmm. which the United States has had to take around, and countries like Uganda, Rwanda, and others have actually signed it. At the same time, they are members of their own statute. Mm-hmm. Is there no contradiction here? Are these countries not violating the Rome Treaty?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, there is definitely a contradiction. If you look at the ICC, Article 98 is actually the only obligation that is on states. Mm-hmm. And the obligation is to surrender perpetrators are wanted by the court. Many of the provisions of the ICC are jurisdictional. So that's really the only one that you can say is an obligation. And these countries undertook to do that. And by them signing treaties with the United States saying that they will not hand over U.S. nationals who are wanted by the court, is my view clearly a violation of the treaty. And I think they're motivated simply by, aid concerns, because mm-hmm. the U.S. has made it clear that if they don't sign on to that, then they will not be getting military aid. Mm-hmm. So I have no doubt in my mind that there is definitely a contradiction.
What about the issue of impunity? How can impunity, as we have come to know it really, mm-hmm. be ended? Is there any chance that the ICC may in fact be the medicine that the doctor ordered for?
I strongly believe that if we support the ICC and stop these concerns that it's focusing on Africa, that we have a real chance to really end impunity. Because we want these countries to move forward, mm-hmm. in terms of democracy, in terms of governance. And as Compos was saying, we have to be on the side of the victims. And we cannot be seen to be protecting perpetrators. Mm-hmm. And I think that it is for the good of the continent that persons who have perpetrated heinous crimes should be punished. Mm-hmm. And there should be no impunity. And I think this is where, really, I support the ICC, that it is our one hope that this will happen. Because we've seen that on a domestic level, we cannot control that. There's a lot of impunity in every African country. And you heard the callers talk about Uganda, talk about Kenya. None of them have trust in our judicial systems because they clearly are manipulated by those that are in power.
In the case of Kenya was lucky. Some might say perhaps because it happens to be a vital national security interest of some of the major superpowers and all that kind of stuff, because of course of access to Mombasa. They have a huge United Nations complex at Gigiri. They have more than 5,000, in fact, UN officials living in Kenya and what have you. But what about some who will say, wait a minute, what about in 2005 when the Ethiopian government used its security forces to actually shoot at unarmed people, innocent people, and according to some reports, at least 200 people were killed, and nothing happened.
Yeah, and I think that comes back to the same issue that we were talking about earlier, that no doubt what happened in Ethiopia deserves to be condemned, and the people need to be punished for that. But then legally, you have a situation where Ethiopia is not a member of the ICC. So the only way you can get action on Ethiopia is to rely on the Security Council. Here we need the Security Council to refer that situation to the ICC, and then they would have a jurisdiction. But without that, the court cannot move on Ethiopia.
So it looks like you may, in fact, have to have a friend in the Security Council.
Well, at
in
least,
order for that to happen, really.
Yeah, at least somebody who is not going to block any moves.
Let's go to the telephone callers. At least that's the lifeline of the show, Professor Munandulo. Let's go to Ghana. Let's go to Tafa. Good evening, Tafa. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Shaka. Your good evening, Shaka.
I am terrific. Tafa, you have 30 minutes. I'm afraid time is not our best ally because there is a long queue.
Thank you very much. Shaka, we have a bad light today. The rain is raining badly, and I am managing to. I hope you forgive me for bad quality of the voice.
No, you sound loud and clear. What is your question, Tafa?
Thank you very much. Shaka, as much as I agree 100% that some of our African leaders need to be put a trial before International Criminal Court, I also believe 100% the International Criminal Court is not being fair. If you look at some of the Western leaders, the way they violate human rights, and they are still working free. Shaka, we were here when President of the United States of America, President George Bush, tell the whole world that there's a weapons of mass of destruction in Iraq. Therefore, the whole world should come and join him to go and remove it. Some countries move with him. They went there and nothing has been found. And innocent people have been massacred.
Thank you.
We have never heard Luis Campos condemn it or making any attempt to bring a President Bush and then Tony Blair to justice.
Thank you.
If we're to be African leader.
Thank you, Tafa. Thank you, Tafa. We have to go on real, if you don't mind. Let's go to Thomas from Zambia. Good evening, Thomas. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa. You have 30 seconds.
Good evening, Shaka.
I am terrific. How are you today, Thomas?
Mutozi Bondula, Royal Doctor.
Hello, how are you?
Fine, thank you. What I'm concerned about in Africa is that why don't we nip the thing in the bud? Why do we have to wait for ICC? In Zambia, we had Mufumbe, a couple of people were killed, nothing happened. Now we have to wait for 1,000 more, and you know, then we start saying that we have to have the ICC come in.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Let's go to Augustine, South Africa. Good evening, Augustine. You're welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Good evening, sir.
I am terrific. You have 30 seconds, rather. Please.
Yes, please. My question is to the professor. Is Zambia affiliated or is a signatory to the treaty? If so, is ICC aware that atrocities were committed during the reign of Chiluba and is claiming to be...
Thank you. Thank you very much. You have 30 seconds.
Okay. The first question relating to the Iraqi invasion, I think again here we're getting back to the same issue, that Sure. I think that, you know, there's a case to be made that crimes were committed in Iraq. But again, it's a question of jurisdiction. The ICC doesn't have jurisdiction because Iraq is not a member of the treaty. And what you'd have to have in order for action to be taken would be, again, the Security Council to refer the matter to the ICC.
But to make sure that there is no permanent member that blocks it.
And that's the problem, that, you know, I mean, the idea of the ICC now is that we are replacing these courts that used to be formed, like Yugoslavia, Rwanda, so now we can refer to the ICC. But the handicap we have is that you have to be a member in order to have the jurisdiction. Now, the question from Zambia is quite a quick answer, that Zambia is a member of the ICC. Yes,
I see.
Yes.
So we can do business. Mm-hmm. Well, on that note, thanks to our distinguished guests, Munandulo, Professor of Law at the Cornell Law School and Director of the Institute for African Development at the same university. And he's also a member, of course, of the Advisory Committee of Human Rights Watch Africa. Luis Moreno Ocampo, the ICC Chief Prosecutor, also joined us earlier from the UN Secretariat in New York. Thanks to you all and to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners. We thank you for tuning in. If you're listening to us on the Voice of America, Special English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Batte. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. And in the meantime, get better, not bitter. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive. We'll be right back.